slow down.
Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Robin Fader, co-executive director of the Reading Fashion Alliance. We are hosting the 2019 Reading Fashion Week starting September 6th with a trunk show at Carousel Boutique. The fashion show gala featuring several local fashion designers and models is happening September 7th at the downtown Reading Atrium. We are featuring a fashion lounge, DJ, drinks, and hors d'oeuvres. Support small businesses in Reading on Shop Local Night, September 12th from 4 to 8 p.m. We will wrap up Reading Fashion Week with an opening reception for the iconic fashion exhibit at Turtle Bay Exploration Park, featuring designer fashion from the collection of Alita Carpenter on September 13th from 6 to 9 p.m. We have so many great events. Get tickets and more information at www.readingfashionalliance.org. We can't wait to see you at Reading Fashion Week, beginning September 6th.
Your host hasn't seen everything in sports, but sometimes he acts like it, and his guests probably have. Now, the host of Scorecard Scribblings, your sports guy, Brent Weber.
Welcome back to Scorecard Scribblings. Brent Weber here, and it is a pleasure to talk via the magic of telephone and the internet, I guess, with my friend Ron Adams, a longtime NBA coach. He's been with, I believe, seven NBA teams, most notably, I think, to us here in the California area, and certainly based on the rings he's earned as assistant coach with the Golden State Warriors, and three-time NBA champion. Did I have the numbers correct there, Ron Adams?
That is correct, yeah.
So do you wear all the rings at once, or how's that work?
I've never put all the rings on at one time, maybe once, but they're good, they're great mementos. But the rings stay in your heart and your head. That's who the most important.
Well, the last guy people get to know are the assistant coaches. For me, one of the great blessings I had during the short time I worked with the Oklahoma City Thunder was we did get to travel with the team, and I learned a lot about basketball. We talked a lot about life, which as a coach, I think you cannot separate that in your approach in working with all these different teams. And a little bit more on your background. You were a coach at Fresno Pacific, Fresno State head coach at both of those schools. You were part of Tark Strait team and UNLV. You also coached at other college places, but starting back in 92 with San Antonio, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, Chicago, the first of two stints, the Oklahoma City Thunder, Boston, and Golden State since 2014. And what I did learn during the time with you was that basketball is, especially with your teaching, yeah, there's plenty of X's and O's, but you have to connect the man to the work. And I know that's something you as a coach always try to keep in mind.
Well, I have tried to do that. Basketball is a very social enterprise, as you know, and it's a compilation of a lot of people working together to make something good happen. But in the process, there's so many great relationships between sports writers and coaches and all of your support group in a given organization with coaches. Fans, obviously when you do well, you're a great fan favorite, and sometimes certainly less of a fan favorite when things aren't going well. But through it all, you just develop a number of different relationships, and that's what makes the sport special. We try to keep it real, you know. What we're doing isn't rocket science. It's fun work. There's so many people who are doing more important work in our culture, so you have to keep that in perspective.
You're considered by many to be a top defensive coach. You've been voted the top assistant coach, I know. The bottom line is defense has been a big part of your job, and that can be a mental thing as well. Getting NBA players, maybe when you get them as young men, haven't had a lot of defensive coaching. How real is that difficulty, and what are the biggest lessons you've learned that teaching talented young players defense is what's going to win championships?
Well, that's an interesting question because everyone who comes to this level who, let's say, makes an NBA roster is a good player. It's a very unforgiving league. You have to have talent, and you have to have other special characteristics to make an NBA team. And there's a sense of arriving after signing a contract. And, of course, that's only the beginning. Mm-hmm. And so everyone comes at it. Every young player comes at it a bit differently with a different perspective. But we're always faced with this fact in our league. People are striving to create their own brand, for lack of a better word, to be someone as an individual. And yet we're obviously coaching, as in any team sport, a team. So for success, certain things are required of everyone to blend into that team and make for a successful team. So that's kind of always the quandary. Defense is always the, for many players, kind of the less appealing part of the game, but it's the critical part of the game because if you look at any championship team, seldom, if ever, does a championship team not have that as its core, a great defense. So that's the challenge, and when you get people who kind of see the greater picture of the game, and that's your job as a coach to help paint that picture and bring up that that whole enterprise to fruition, then you begin to make headway. I will say this, that everyone is not created equal. Obviously, there are people who can really shoot the ball and other people can't. Some people can rebound better than other people, and some people can defend better than other people. It's a mentality. It's a way of being and doing for that particular individual. And so in the selection process, you hopefully bring in players who have already a defensive component to their game and consider it as important. And then people who are perhaps more offensive-oriented or who have not internalized the defense quite as well, you utilize them also as best you can. And also you try to seek improvements. Everyone can get better. If you're a poor shooter coming into the league, you can get better through good work, fundamental work in shooting. The same holds true defensively. So regardless of where you start defensively, everyone can improve. They do, guys do improve. Mm-hmm. You take the strengths of your good defensive players. They're the leaders. You build around them, and the other guys kind of fall into place. I have no idea if I even answered your question, but
it was a long question.
I got it a bit of a roll. I apologize for it.
I love it.
That is my interview with Ron Adams, part one, the longtime assistant coach for Steve Kerr and with others in the NBA. We'll find out what this team is preparing for and what his new job, new role will be with Golden State. When we return, Brent Weber here on Scorecard Scribblings. Then later on, we'll hear part two of our interview with Dave Cohen that we missed from last week, a veteran college football play-by-play announcer. And before we're done, Chris Combs, head coach of the Enterprise Hornets. That's all tonight on Scorecard Scribblings.
This is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Carl's Jr. presents The Breakfast That Got Away.
Ever since you left, I've been broken. When the sun rises, my heart falls. You gave me a reason to get up in the morning. Please, come back.
It's back! Carl's Jr.'s chorizo biscuit and burrito are back on the breakfast menu. Get spicy chorizo, egg, and pepper jack cheese on a made-from-scratch biscuit. Or all that wrapped in a warm tortilla with crispy hash browns and fresh-made salsa. Get the chorizo biscuit and burrito today at Carl's Jr. Available for a limited time at participating locations.
The Reading Rancheria Senior Nutrition Program provides socialization, transportation, and free meals to eligible Native American elders and their spouses. Our program celebrates Native elders through cultural activities, entertainment, exercise, and education. Elders can dine together here and will deliver meals to those who are unable to attend. The Reading Rancheria Senior Nutrition Program is free. Discover the services available to you or your elders at readingrancheria.com.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our interviews on them give you the whole story rather than mainstream media soundbites.
We'll bring you experts on politics, national security, environmental craziness, veterans affairs, Agenda 21, foreign affairs, and everything in between.
Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
It's the most fun you can have while talking about them.
Join us every Sunday from noon until 2. We the People Radio here at KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Welcome back to Scorecard Scribblings. I'm your host, Brent Weber. You can learn more about the show at scorecardscribblings.com. Send me an email, brent@scorecardscribblings.com. Now part two of my interview with Golden State Warriors assistant coach Ron Adams, who's been voted in the past as the top assistant coach in the NBA, and of course has three NBA championship rings as part of his work with the Golden State Warriors. We pick up with the future and, well, the present and the future. And the past a little bit, I guess. Let's just listen in.
You know, the Golden State Warriors experience, they're all unique. And this has been one of the great, deeply spotlighted teams. Everybody talked about how great they were, you guys were, and then this Golden State was, then this kid Durant comes. I'm sure everybody just credits Ron Adams for everything Kevin Durant has done. But, you know, and not to overemphasize one guy, but obviously I was there when he came to Oklahoma City in his second year, and you were there. And that's a pretty special guy. In my mind, in my era of covering, that's probably my favorite all-time player, but there were some pretty good ones. But He's pretty special, isn't he?
Yeah, he really is. I think he's arguably, but I think he's the best basketball player in the world. Great versatility. It's nothing he can't do well. I think if Kevin commits himself, or maybe I should say it a bit differently, but if he focuses on a given aspect of the game, whether it be rebounding, playmaking, obviously his scoring comes pretty naturally, defense, whatever it might be, when he focuses on those areas, he's great in every area. So we were really blessed to have him here. It was really interesting seeing the contrast of when he was a younger player in Oklahoma City, mm-hmm. and now as an older veteran player who has gone through a lot of different experiences, and how those experiences have shaped him. That was an interesting study.
Mm-hmm.
For us, he was tremendous, great in the playoffs, so unfortunate that he couldn't play this year. I think there's no question in my mind that we would have won our fourth championship this year with him. And having said that, I felt that if Clay hadn't gone down in game six, I think we were going to win that game six. I think we could have possibly won another championship even without Kevin, but with Kevin, I think we would have been, again, devastating. So his impact on our program was great. I was very saddened to see him choose another team, but at the same time, I feel very privileged to have had him in our program for the past 3 years, and I think that's kind of how you have to look at it, at least
sure.
how I look at it.
Sure, and there are so many interesting, valuable pieces of what you have done and are still doing at Golden State. And you mentioned those injuries. I can't think of teams that could lose those two guys, you know, at those critical moments and overcome it, but you guys certainly nearly did. The good news, I think, for Warriors fans is that you also had free agency. You are returning to Golden State, albeit in a different role. You know, tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing at the new facility this year.
Well, I'm still, excuse me, I'm still doing some of what I used to do. I've worked with Jaron Collins, who's a terrific young coach. And he's assisted me with the defensive portion of our program, and I've tried to be a good mentor to him in that regard, and so he'll be doing our defense next year, this upcoming season, I should say. The year is upon us, but so I am going to be there to help him out, just a highly capable person. I'm going to be doing a little bit more in player development and helping Chris DeMarco, who's the head of our player development and does a great job for us. Another young coach with great potential and is just a wonderful human being. And just helping with odds and ends. I won't be on the bench, in the front of the bench anyway. I think it's kind of a good progression for me to step back a little bit and also probably I will be doing a bit less traveling this year, which I think will be something good for me. I'll be 72 in November, which to me isn't very old, but for this sport it's fairly old, and I have invested a lot in our young coaches and in this program, and I think it kind of is sensible at this point maybe to take a little bit of a step back and continue on helping others, which I kind of feel is my role at this moment.
We're talking to Ron Adams, the pride of Layton High School, right? Fresno Pacific Vikings, and of course, with the NBA's Golden
Sunbirds now.
The Suns, oh, that's right, they changed.
You were Vikings. Vikings were too violent, a moniker, so.
I know time is valuable, but I just want to ask you a couple more questions, because you're not someone who ever, I don't think you sit still very often. You are kind of a sponge, I know, and you do like to give back in terms of basketball. You just went to Europe. Was that basketball or was that personal or both?
No, it wasn't basketball. My wife laid down the law this summer that I could not do anything on any trip associated with basketball, which I've done for the last God knows how many years. So we did a different kind of vacation with friends, and it was good. But I've always combined work and pleasure. But I was not allowed to do that this summer, so.
I think it's good that you went out there.
Yeah, it was a good summer. I had a great summer, actually, and tried to recharge and think through some things. The only bad part of the summer was I lost a good friend of mine, a tennis partner of mine, so that was a tough thing. And you know, life is so strange. I was talking with Willie Cauley Stein yesterday in the weight room, and Willie is a good young fellow, and we were talking about his summer, and he lost his grandfather and his best friend. I was just thinking what a tremendous effect that had on his life this summer. And for all of us, we have family members, we have friends and so on, and part of life is, of course, coping with loss, but it's so difficult when it comes our way, whether it be from family or friends. So I was very saddened to hear that about Willie, but everyone obviously has those experiences.
And those are the perspectives that I think being behind the scenes, as I have been more of an observer, obviously, but that I always try to emphasize the fans and the folks is that, you know, we're talking about people who work in a job that they generally love, and they do have to form bonds, and they do have to turn to one another throughout time. And that is ultimately there. I can't think of many championship caliber teams in any sport that didn't have a high level of that as you guys have at Golden State. I want to ask you about the new facility. How is that going to be? Is it, you know, they've been great fans in Oakland. Great fans, mm-hmm. I think, over the years. I feel for them a little bit. I think everybody doesn't want them to be left out, but there's got to be excitement moving into the new facility.
Well, there's tremendous excitement. a lot of work has been put into the building. Rick Welts kind of spearheaded it. He's done a great job, but Joe Lacob and our other owners have also done yeoman's work. So much goes into that that enterprise, and it's a state-of-the-art building. It will be a fantastic venue for fans. It's a really an entertainment center. It's our home as a basketball team, but it's so much more than that. And it's pretty massive. I got lost the first time I went into it. I finally figured out how to get into it seamlessly into the building. But it's a really exciting time in the history of the franchise, and I applaud all of the people who were a part of making this happen, especially our ownership. For me, I look at life a bit differently. I loved where we were in Oakland.
Yeah.
I loved our practice facility. It was older and quaint. I live in Oakland. This is where I will continue to live. The fabulous City, as in San Francisco. But that's kind of deal. I mean, it's funny when we were in Oklahoma City and we had the old practice facility, which there was a skating rink.
That's right.
And to me, I'm a country kid, and you know, you like, you know, I never had great facilities as a college player or as a high school player, and I thought the practice facility in Oklahoma City was fantastic. It was homey. It was open. It was inviting. And it was where it all started, right? Where the team came together, tremendous young players, James and Kevin and Russell and Serge Ibaka, all of these guys. We just had a tremendous young group. But it was such a pleasant setting, as was our old place in Oakland. I must say, the new practice facility, though, is beautiful. It is open. The weight room faces onto the, or faces the practice floor. It will be a great place to be, but, you know, as you get older, there's a certain amount of nostalgia, and, this Oakland was so good to us, you know, and, we'll have such great memories of it, but, so, as with most things, I look at it from various angles, but the new building is exciting. I'm sure it will be exciting for the players and for the fans and certainly for the city of San Francisco and hopefully for the greater area.
But just to put it in perspective for folks, Golden State opens at the Chase Center preseason against the Lakers October 5th. So we're talking less than a month, an awful lot of work to be done between now and then. Ron Adams, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me, and I really look forward to coming to the arena as a member of the media and getting a chance to see the facility, saying hello to you and all my good friends there. And appreciate you taking the time. And best of luck. Have a blast this season at age 71, soon to be 72.
Thank you so much, and best of luck to you. It's really good to hear your voice again.
You too. Ron Adams, thank you so much. Back with more on Scorecard Scribbling.
No one plans to visit the emergency room, but when life's accidents happen, you need to get treated, not seated. Shasta Regional Medical Center is located at 1100 Butte Street in downtown Reading. They have emergency room doctors and staff that guarantee you will be seen by a medical professional within 30 minutes of your arrival. Shasta Regional Medical Center believes in delivering patient-centered health care with compassion and respect for every patient and their family.
Hello, Americans. You know what the news is. Now you're going to know the rest of the story. This is Paul Marvey for Alliance Heating and Air Conditioning. A local family needed a new heating and cooling system, but they never found anyone better than Alliance. We learned long ago that it's the people that make our systems better. Alliance Heating and Air Conditioning, 221-2642, or visit us online at homecomfort.org. And that's the rest of the story. Good day.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction with your security tip of the day. If it doesn't look right, it probably isn't. Many people hang around to investigate what may be a crime only to become a victim themselves because they confront a violent criminal. Leave the area and call your local law enforcement agency immediately. Another important part of your personal protection plan may be the use of a firearm. If that's your choice, give NFI a call at 999-1822 or find and register for one of our popular CCW courses at usgunpro.com. Remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
From the Pacific Justice Institute, this is The Legal Edge, defending your rights as a Christian, a parent, and a citizen. Here's Brad Dickus.
A church-affiliated Bible school in the United States territories of the South Pacific has secured Pacific Justice Institute to defend it in a discrimination lawsuit. After hiring a man to work in the school office, he refused to sign the school statement of faith, as required of all employees. It turns out he is actually a voodoo priest and has filed these kinds of discrimination lawsuits before. To be forced to hire or pay damages to someone who opposes biblical views would be a bad precedent and a tragic violation of First Amendment rights.
The Pacific Justice Institute provides legal representation to individuals without charge. Learn more at pacificjustice.org. That's pacificjustice.org.
As gun laws continue to tighten up across the country, Bastiani Arms will continue to provide our community with quality firearms, hard-to-find ammo, off-list fully built AR lower receivers, and the absolute best customer service. Get out of the grab-and-go box stores and come talk to a knowledgeable firearms specialist. The good guys at Bastiani Arms are real gun enthusiasts with two full-time gunsmiths on hand 5 days a week. Right now, Bastiani Arms is stocked up on hard-to-find fine ammo, 30-30, 38 Special, and 44 Magnum. More people than ever are exercising their rights to conceal and carry a firearm. Seth Stoke has over 20 years' experience in firearms and offers CCW classes, women-only CCW classes, and hunter education. Bastiani Arms has everything you need for firearms, and they appreciate you shopping local. Bastiani Arms, on the corner of Larkspur Lane and Wall Street in Reading. Join the revolution.
Welcome back to Scorecard Scribblings. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Ron Adams, my friend and a longtime NBA assistant coach with the Golden State Warriors and many other teams. And now we're going to go back, turn it back to 1 week ago. Yes, Georgia State University pulled maybe, well, what I think is still the upset of the college football season as they beat an SEC team, a major conference team for the first time in their 10-year history. And Dave Cohen has been there for every one of those games. He's a longtime college broadcaster in the Atlanta area. And so we wanted to talk a little bit about college football. Because of some technical difficulties, we didn't get to part two. So let's listen to that now. This is Dave Cohen on Scorecard Scribblings.
Welcome back. With Dave Cohen here on Scorecard Scribblings. And Dave is the play-by-play voice for Georgia State University football, basketball, baseball, and he joins us now. We're longtime friends, but did not expect to be having you on the show this week after your employers defeated the University of Tennessee in the big shocker of the college football campaign. Of course, the season just getting started, but this can mean an awful lot to a program that pretty much recruits, I don't want to say exclusively, but pretty much Georgia. And, you know, all of a sudden you're talking to people all over the, or they're going to hear from people all over the country that might be interested in their program. And you'll take me through the win over the SEC team, Tennessee. Now, the Volunteers may not be in the midst of their glory days, but this is a Southeastern Conference team, and it brings to mind to me wins that we've seen over the decades by schools like Appalachian State and others that can put you on the map, or Georgia State on the map.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, when Appalachian State went up to the Big House and beat Michigan, what fans have to remember and realize is they were still at the FCS level in the Southern Conference. Now, they were good. Don't get me wrong. They were in a stretch late there in the SoCon where they won three FCS national championships. So that was a really, really great, solid program. But they went into Ann Arbor, into the Big House, and they beat Michigan when Michigan, I think, was ranked fifth in the country, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So that is still the only time that an FCS program, and Appy, I'm sure, was ranked at that point, that an FCS program has gone into a top 25 FBS program and beaten them like that. Interesting side note, Georgia State's current head football coach, Sean Elliott, who came to Georgia State after serving on the staff of Steve Spurrier in South Carolina and 1 year of Will Muschamp. Not only was Coach Elliott, back a number of years a player at Appalachian State, but he was an assistant coach on that Appalachian State team that went up to Michigan and beat the Wolverines. So, you know, just an interesting, hey, did you know kind of side note. But, you know, for Georgia State, the closest we've come in 9 years in one game of beating a Power Five was about 3 years ago. We played at Wisconsin, and we led the Badgers in the fourth quarter, but ended up losing 23-17. But, you know, Georgia State, to this point, Brent, has not shied away from playing those guarantee games. In the 9 years in one game that this program has played, we've been to Alabama twice and lost 63-7 and 45-3.
Mm-hmm.
The other interesting note, the 45-3 loss, the only points that we scored, that field goal, were kicked by Will Lux, who's now the starting place kicker, or the only place kicker for the New Orleans Saints.
That's right.
So, kind of cool that the only two players that scored in the two games against Alabama, one plays for the Dolphins, the other plays for the Saints. But we played at Alabama twice. We've now played at Tennessee twice. We have played at Oregon. We have played at Wisconsin. We have played at Washington. We have played at Clemson. We have played at Penn State. So Georgia State has not shied away from either, you know, scheduling Power Five programs like that, but at the same time knowing they were gonna get a check when they got on the bus or the airplane. So
right.
A lot has happened, but it can be hard to, get a football program up and running. And, you know, we're on our third coach. Coach Bill Curry coached 3 years. Trent Miles followed him, coached four or five. And now, Coach Elliott's going into his third season. And, so it's still a process. I mean, it's a young program. We always say you can't win the Daytona 500 driving a go-kart.
Right.
Basically, you know, when you compare, I mean, Tennessee has been playing for 100 years. And so, you know, we're a go-kart. And so Coach Elliott, you mentioned recruiting Georgia. They do primarily recruit Georgia. But he's from South Carolina and, again, coached in South Carolina. And a number of his staff members are from South Carolina. So it's primarily Georgia, Florida, South Carolina, maybe over into Alabama a little bit and down into Florida. That's primarily where you'll find most of the kids that are on the Georgia State roster to this point.
For those who don't realize or don't know, Georgia State beat Tennessee 38-30 in Knoxville Saturday afternoon. Dave Cohen made that call, and I joked earlier that it wasn't as close as that score because, frankly, it was just a couple of seconds ago, Tennessee scored. That was the shocking thing. A big turnover rate, I think, played into Georgia State's hands for you as a broadcaster calling that game. And again, as the game goes on now, because it's available on ESPN, even though your voice isn't heard on that, yours is on the radio. As that kind of game goes on, you have to get a sense that more and more people are starting to listen. And you know, for you, by the end of that thing, you probably had one of your better audiences.
Well, I would hope so. We kind of tag along. You know how when you see a shark swimming, there's always a bunch of smaller fish swimming all around it?
Yeah.
Well, we're kind of one of those smaller fish swimming around the larger body of work, which is the Georgia State football program. But, you know, on our pregame show and even off the air going into it, we said, because look, we were 2-10 last year, they were 5-7.
Right.
So neither program was really, accomplishing a whole lot last year. But going in there for us, the keys for me were to, number one, go in there and get off to a good start. And don't turn the ball over early and get down early, which we've seen in so many of the Power Five games that we have played. So, you know, we go in there and on Tennessee, we win the coin toss and we deferred. And Tennessee has the ball first. They're marching down the field. Jared Garantano, their quarterback, throws a pass out on the out towards the sideline. The kid bobbles it. And Kearney for Georgia State ends up coming up with an interception. We've got the ball at the Tennessee 23-yard line. And six plays later, we're in the end zone on a seven-page, four-yard touchdown run. And right away, that's a great way to go in to a stadium like that where the Rocky Top is blaring every other play. And it's a great way to announce, in quotations, we're here.
Right.
And we're not here just to collect a check, but we're here to play a football game, and if it's within our power, we're here to try to win this sucker and get back to Atlanta. And, you know, they came back, ended up taking a 14-7 lead. We came back early, first play of the second quarter. We come back, we tie it at 14 on a 16-play drive, which was telling because for us to put together that long of a drive against Tennessee on the road was kind of eye-opening right there. We were 10 of 17 overall in the afternoon on third down conversion, which was really good. They take a field goal lead into the locker room. That was another big play right there. Within the final 30 seconds to a minute, they've got the ball inside the Georgia State 5-yard line.
Wow.
And we kept them out of the end zone. And with 1 second left before halftime, they kick a field goal. Brent Samaglia kicks the field goal. They're up at halftime, 17-14. Georgia State knows that they've got the ball to start the second half. And what did Georgia State do? They came right out, marched downfield, replaying the lead with a touchdown. And at that point, Brent, and you've been in these stadiums before, Tennessee being one of them with that many people, Georgia State took the crowd somewhat out of the ballgame. Now, Tennessee wasn't really playing that well, per se, but we took the crowd, for the most part, out of the ballgame. And by the time we got late third quarter and throughout the fourth quarter, people in orange were leaving to go back to their cars, their tailgates, or whatever. And when Dan Ellington scores, now Trey Barnett scored a touchdown, but when our quarterback, Dan Ellington, scampers on that 22-yard touchdown run, and we go up like two scores, boy, all of the energy was out of the building. In other words, there was no home crowd advantage. There was no energy to try to fire Tennessee up. And at that point, Georgia State's confidence is riding sky high, and they're starting to look up at that scoreboard and look at the empty stands and say, man, we got a shot to win this thing. All we've got to do is play smart football and don't do anything stupid, don't turn it over, and don't give up any big plays.
Right. And that's exactly what happened, 38-30 the final. Got a couple more minutes with Dave Cohen, voice of the Georgia State Panthers, who shocked the college football world last week. And Dave, you know, for perspective, people need to realize Georgia State moved up. I mean, they 10th year in the program. You can compete for a bowl game and so on. You guys played in one bowl, I believe. Two bowls, excuse me. The fact of the matter is, you know, we're going to get back to this thing again where people start talking about the college football playoffs, and we're kind of changing gears here. But I know you have some wonderful thoughts on that. I'd like to get that to you before we wrap up. You know, up here we've got good programs in and out. Of course, Oregon is big in this area, and of course the Bay Area teams as well. But what are your thoughts on where college football should go at the top level?
Well, as I answer that, I'm going to ask you, what is, in your opinion, collegiately, what's the best college event each and every year?
Oh, wow. You know, to me, it used to be the bowl games. I used to love the games. But now, obviously, I think the single game championship is to me it. But that may not have been the answer you're looking for. I love the, you know, the Granddaddy, the Rose Bowl, and things like that. I always love the old system, but I'm an old guy, I guess.
Well, the answer to the question, at least from my standpoint, the best college event every calendar year is the NCAA basketball tournament.
Oh, okay, good point. I think you're talking football. Yeah, you're right.
And why is that? Because, you know, Georgia State is as Division I as Duke and North Carolina. The budgets aren't the same, and the facilities aren't the same, but we're as Division I as those programs. And the greatest two or three days of the NCAA tournament, in my opinion, is the first couple of days, because that's when you see Georgia State beat Baylor on a buzzer beater. That's when you see a couple of 3 years ago Mercer out of Macon, Georgia, goes to beat Duke. That's where you see the upsets. That's where you see the Cinderellas. And so basketball has that. They allow everybody, if you qualify, to play for a national championship. It wasn't that long ago that Georgia State was in the Colonial Athletic Association before coming back to the Sun Belt. And in the 6 or 7 years that we were in the Colonial, which is primarily up and down the East Coast, mm-hmm. George Mason reached the Final Four, and Virginia Commonwealth reached the Final Four. It's an open tournament. If you're good enough and you can beat Duke or North Carolina or Oklahoma or whoever,
mm-hmm.
you earn the right to play in the tournament. What's happened in college football is that with television, they've kind of made it, you know, they've built this, what I'll call the college football playoff treehouse,
mm-hmm.
and they only let like 8 or 9 schools come up into the treehouse. All the rest of us are sitting down on the grass looking up at those in the treehouse because all they want is Alabama and mm-hmm. Clemson and Oklahoma and Ohio State and possibly Georgia. In other words, you know the schools I'm talking about. It's the same ones they talk about all the time. So here's what I would propose if they came to me, and I always say, there ain't nobody standing in my doorway asking me my opinion other than you.
Right.
They should go to a 12-team playoff. Each Division I conference gets a bid. So whoever comes out of the Sun Belt Conference championship game, they get one of the 10 playoff spots. Then mm-hmm. you also have 2 wild cards. So God forbid, let's just say Georgia beats Alabama in the championship game, and Alabama was previously undefeated. That's their first loss. Okay, give Alabama one of the 2 wild card spots.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia would win because they won the conference championship. And that way, whether you're in the Sun Belt or Conference USA or the ACC or the Pac-12 or whatever, everybody at the beginning of the season knows their play to earn the right to get the bid to play in the college football championship. Just like in the Sun Belt, Brent. Mm-hmm. Now, whereas the ACC gets 12 bids or 9 bids to the NCAA basketball tournament, we get one. Mm-hmm. There are 12 schools all year battling to get to that Sun Belt tournament, and then you got to win 3 games, maybe 4, to win the tournament and get the automatic bid. College football, there's no automatic bid. There's a committee. Right. And primarily, you know, television has a big hand in it because they want eyeballs.
Sure.
So it's going to be, you know, look, UCF is a perfect example. As good as the University of Central Florida has been the last couple of years, they couldn't even get a sniff.
Yeah.
Boise State during the years, they were good, couldn't get a sniff. They don't want to invite anybody to the party unless you're one of the big boys that I mentioned, and they're not going to invite you up into the treehouse.
Well, Dave Cullen, we will talk about this more when we get closer to the playoffs and see where your employers, and I must mention we are both alumni of Georgia State University. I kind of buried that lead in Atlanta, Georgia. People are talking about the program, but after that big win, thanks for that. Congratulations on the long career. You're just beginning. Ha-ha. And this year, Georgia State up 1-0 as you go to Furman. So, got to win that game, Georgia State University, to keep it going. And Dave Cullen, thanks for joining me.
I appreciate it. I enjoyed it. And again, it should be me thanking you for everything over all these years. I appreciate it. Best to you.
So what's Scorecard Scribbling's all about?
I was scared for my life at that point. I remember looking to the right and seeing all the medical supplies there, and I'm just thinking, are they going to cut off a leg? What are we doing here?
I had a coach that would come up to me on the plane, stick his hand out. I knew what he wanted.
Yeah.
Who am I not to give him to him? Like, I thought, okay, job security.
We came to the ballpark every day. We knew we were going to win. It's a great experience, a great feeling to be on a club like that.
Scorecard Scribblings with Brent Weber, Wednesday nights from 6 to 7 on KCNR.
Enterprise head coach Chris Combs, let's start with week one for you guys. And I said it on the air several times in the beginning. It looked like a team that had a couple of weeks under them, playing a team that was kind of getting their yah-yahs out a little bit. And the mistakes, like happens in the first week, really cost you in the end. But throw out those penalties, I don't know what kind of game that would have been.
Yeah, we don't want it to be an excuse for us, but we had 3 turnovers in the first quarter. Then we have a touchdown call back late in the fourth quarter that probably would have tied it for us. you know, we don't look back and say first game, it is what it is. We got to play better than that. Doesn't matter what week of the football season it is.
When you talk about the positives now, I guess you could say those are correctable mistakes, right? And not uncommon in the early season. And I'm particularly talking about, you know, penalties. You mentioned the play called back. So you're a positive kind of guy. How do you approach that? How did you approach that when you came right back out on practice on Monday? What did you dwell on to this point?
Well, we always think next play, whether it was a bad play or a penalty or turnover, whatever, it's next play. So we're always thinking that we have another opportunity to make a positive impact on the game. Each player has a positive impact to make on the game as well. And so that's our mindset going forward. And that's kind of what you saw, you know, in the second, third, and even into the fourth quarter with us. We kind of carry that same mindset over into this game, you know, and with the idea of let's just clean some things up. Let's get back to our technique and work our technique things and be really solid in our fundamentals.
What I saw once you guys got clicking, and obviously it was working well with the starting quarterback, and then when you had to make a change, and you can explain that down near the goal line, it worked well. And I saw depth in the offense in terms of, I don't know how to prepare for you guys. You do an awful lot, and then you ran the I formation really well, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the beauty of our offensive scheme. You know, we can line up in the eye and run some power football, and then we can spread you out. We have a lot of skill guys. We have a lot of smart guys that understand multiple positions. And, you know, obviously having two quarterbacks that can run the system and having Pierce go down with an ankle injury on an option play that got us down inside the three. And then, you know, he goes out and Zach comes in, and it's like we didn't miss a beat. He ran the offense perfectly, scored the touchdown for us, even converted the two-point conversion on a pass play for us. We got a lot of confidence in these guys based off what they've been able to show us in the weeks coming up to this season. So we don't have any issues putting a guy in. We know exactly that we're not going to have a lot of drop-off there.
And that positive of just, you know, flip that game around and you'd be banging your heads, you'd be worried. But the changes that you made during the game, the adjustments, the guys never seem to let it get to them. And that's a real positive, something that can really carry over into the week against last.
Yeah, I mean, we were constantly harping on our belief system, you know, just talked about it being next play and staying positive with each other and understanding that, you know, the game's going to go up and down and it's going to go here or there, and we're always thinking next play and we can make an impact on the game. The guys really believe in that, and the more they believe in that, the better we get. You know, and we're always trying to recertify our belief system but also crack the other team's belief system, and if we can get to that point where we can break their belief in what they're trying to do, then we won the game.
I'll be taking on the Lassen team that's 1-1. They played two very different teams, but what I just look at statistically, they're throwing the ball more than they're running it. What have you seen?
Well, that's exactly what we've seen on tape. We've seen a Lassen team that we're not used to seeing in the past. You used to be pretty heavy run game with the wing T, very, very strong ground and pound type game. We watch it on film, and as we're scouting it, it's almost 50% run, 50% pass. Last week, they moved the ball very well in the air against Chico. Not as much on the ground, but they were probably 50-50 as far as play call, run and pass. So we have to be, you know, our defensive backs got to be on their game because they have a really good passing scheme and a very good timing short pass system that they utilize to move the ball down the field.
Traditionally, I think just in the few years I've been here, but, you know, it's a physical test. They make the drive over or you make the drive over there, and, you know, it's almost half of the city comes over there and your whole student body will go over there. But the fact is that this is generally a pretty good physical battle.
Yeah, I mean, we've in history, you know, history of the section of us playing against these guys, we always get their best, and we're always giving them our best. So, I mean, they like to play us. That's why we've kept this preseason game. This used to be a league game, you know, some years back, and so it was already on the schedule. But now we make it be on the schedule between the two schools. And so, you know, it's a game that we look forward to playing them, and I know they look forward to playing us. They like to play, you know, some of the teams that are bigger than them and to kind of see where they're at before they get in the league. And they're always a physical team, so it's going to be a good test of how physical we can be with them as well.
And last thing, they're high school kids, so you got to keep their feet on the ground opening up for your first game at home, right?
Absolutely. I mean, there's going to be a lot of excitement playing at home. You know, last week we had the first game excitement. This week we got the home game excitement. And, you know, there's always different type of distractions with that playing at home and getting more of your student body out in the crowd and stuff like that. So just try to keep the guys focused and getting them, you know, on what we're trying to do and get them to stay really fundamentally sound for us so that they're ready to go for Friday.
I will have fun, and looking forward to calling you guys 2 weeks in a row. That makes it easier for me. Maybe I'll mispronounce and misidentify a few fewer players. That's my interview with Coach Combs today as they prepare for Friday night's game, our broadcast, our game of the week that'll come this Friday night beginning at 7:15 with pregame show, 7:30 kickoff, Lassen at Enterprise. I'm Brent Weber. Thanks, Ron Adams, Dave Cohen, Chris Combs, and you for joining us. Owen, producer Jared King. See you on Friday night.